you've been noticing higher costs for food, furniture, hotels, rental cars, and more. And if you've been seeing something's missing from store shelves, you're not alone. Supplies are down, demand is up for many products. It's been the case for months during the pandemic. And we received some inflation data this week that it was up in December to a 40-year high. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been seeing and feeling inflation in your life? Where has it affected you? How has it affected you? What do you think is causing it? What questions do you have about what is leading to higher prices for a lot of stuff? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Kevin Barr is Professor of Finance and Chief Analyst at the Center for Business and Economic Insight at UW-Stevens Point. Kevin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, we had inflation tick up earlier this year. There were hopes that it would be fleeting, not stick around. Seems to have stuck around. What are you watching for? How bad is this right now?
Well, in the short term, it's obviously not good. From a longer term, if you want to look and kind of define long-term a little bit, but by the end of 2022, prices will hopefully subside. I mean, a lot of this stuff is going to be tied to supply chain issues, and supply chain issues are, of course, tied to what's going on with COVID. And it's not just COVID in the United States, but it's COVID around the world. If somebody gets sick, can't go to work, or if their children get sick and they have to take care of their children, it takes people out of the workforce. And again, it's not just here, but it's globally. And so as long as COVID hangs on, it's going to affect supply chains.
Yeah, let's stay with the supply chain side of things a little bit in places like China, which, for better or worse, manufacture a lot of stuff, a lot of the stuff we buy. China has a very aggressive lockdown policy, as I understand it, that shuts down factories, maybe even power plants from time to time. Is that the origin story of some of our supply chain problems here?
Absolutely. Or basically just about anybody that we're importing from. I can throw out kind of a quick example, maybe to kind of show how things kind of ripple. But back in 1990, the United States basically produced 37% of the world's semiconductor chips. That 37% has fallen down to about 12%. Most of the stuff that we use is now imported from Southeast Asia. That would include South Korea, Taiwan, China. But if you can't get that semiconductor chip, even though it's a relatively small part of a $30,000 plus vehicle, well, then you're not going to be able to get the vehicle. So that cost goes up. Well, if you can't buy the new vehicle, then you start looking at the used car. Well, then that cost goes up. Used car prices went through the roof last year. Up 37%. Well, what if you want to go on vacation? Then you have to rent a car. Well, those prices are going to go up too because there's a shortage of cars for the rental car companies. So, that supply chain stuff, it's not only what's going on in the United States, it's global, and it's kind of a rippling effect. It's kind of a snowball effect.
We're talking about inflation right now and how it impacts your life with UW-Stevens Point Professor of Finance Kevin Barr. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there something where you've noticed, hey, this costs more than I expected, more than I usually pay for it, whether something small at the grocery store or something big at the furniture store or the car lot? You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences, your thoughts on what's driving this, your questions for our guest. Again, that's 800-642-1234. I want to get a listen to Fed Chairman Jerome Powell talking earlier this week after being questioned about inflation as part of a confirmation hearing to take a second term. Here's some of what he had to say.
If we see inflation persisting at high levels longer than expected, then we will, you know, then we'll, if we have to raise interest rates more over time, we will. We will use our tools to get inflation back. And the main reason is this, that to get the kind of very strong labor market we want with high participation, it's going to take a long expansion. We can see that participation is moving only very slowly. And to get a long expansion, we're going to need price stability. Right. And so in a way, high inflation is a severe threat to the achievement of maximum employment and to achieving a long expansion that can give us that.
Let's tackle that point he just made there, Kevin. Inflation maybe raising the risk that we're not going to bring more people back into the labor market. Can you connect the dots for us?
There's really kind of a couple of things going on. I mean, if you continue to have high inflation, that's definitely going to put a damper on any economic growth. And consequently, you're going to have a reduction in any employment opportunities for people then wishing to go back into the labor force. Last year, job openings were basically at record highs in the United States. They were 30% higher than what they were back in 2018. So the Federal Reserve has kind of a long-term goal of or a long-term inflation target of around 2%. So obviously, we were much higher than that at that 7% level to close out last year. So they're very cognizant of the fact of what high inflation can do on the economy. I think one other point that I might throw out, Chairman Powell mentioned as far as the increase in, of interest rates. Interest rates right now are basically bottomed out. We are at record lows. If you go back over the last 50 years, there's only two times that the Federal Reserve has pushed interest rates down to their current level, which is basically between 0 and 0.25% for very short-term interest rates. That happened after the financial crisis, and it happened after COVID. So the rate levels we have now, that's not normal. That is abnormal. If you go back couple of years ago, interest rates were at 2%. So interest rate increases, they are very, very likely this year. But even if they happen to, say, push short-term rates to 1 to 1.5%, that is still relatively very low in the United States.
It's Brianna. Caller now at 800-642-1234. Bob is with us in Chippewa Falls. Bob, hi.
Hi. Say, I think your guest is right. Even the small chips now we have to depend upon it globally. And when we made that shift probably 20, 30 years ago, everything's great globally as long as it's working well. But if it doesn't work well or we have a pandemic and have to depend upon other countries, that's where we're at. And I frankly think a lot of people forgot about the Phillips curve about 20 years ago, but it's back again on interest rates and inflation. So that's just my comments. So
Bob, thanks for calling. Bob's first comment, Kevin, there are rewards to a globalized economy when things work. As Bob was saying, things can work pretty well. The stuff gets cheaper a lot of the time as people use their, I guess, competitive local advantage. When things don't work, it gets disrupted. It can take a lot longer to untangle.
Bob is absolutely correct. And there's a couple of things behind that. I mean, number one, supply chains over the last 20, 30 years, you know, with globalization, they've really become kind of interconnected, or should say maybe intertwined between countries. And I mean, U.S. corporations made the decision to do that. And the objective is to basically, in a lot of cases, minimize your cost. Well, as Bob pointed out, that's great if there's no sort of bumps in the supply chain. But the problem that you get, if there is a bump in the supply chain, well, then what do? You just don't put up a semiconductor plant overnight. And that's kind of one of the problems with this supply chain stuff for inflation. Well, can it be fixed? Well, yeah, sort of, but it's not going to change overnight. So I think Bob is spot on with his comments.
And Bob mentioned the Phillips curve. I'll admit, I just quick refresh myself on that online. And that's the idea that more employment leads to more inflation, and there's a relationship between the two. Is this still, is this the thinking? I mean, that's kind of what the Fed used to do, right? If employment got too hot, they would worry about inflation.
Well, that's true, although I think in what's gone on in the COVID, you've got a little something different going on. If you look at U.S. employment, we peaked at about 152 million before COVID, and then we lost about 22 million jobs in 2 months. So back in April 2020, that was down to 130 million. Employment's come back to about 149 million, which is obviously good, but we're still not at the employment levels that we were at pre-COVID. So, okay, if we're not at the employment levels that we were at pre-COVID, why is inflation so bad? Well, then you enter the supply chain problems, number one, and also energy costs have gone through the roof. And just about everything that you buy is delivered by a truck. So last year, gas prices were up 50%. Energy prices overall were up 30%. And we definitely could discuss that a little bit more, but that kind of, you know, again, it kind of filters through everything. So, Yeah, the increase in employment, that's definitely, I mean, we've had a strong comeback. Economy's been strong. But with these supply chain issues, inflation's really increased significantly.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. John is on the line in Sturgeon Bay. John, hi.
Hi. Calling to bring up another aspect to this conversation. And, you know, COVID certainly makes sense. But in the Wall Street Journal, there was a recent article, January 11th, and it says the title is "A Big Reason for Rising Prices is the Weather." And I know you mentioned some energy prices, and like in Texas, you know, the big freeze and affect their production and delivery of energy, and then the price went way up because things got frozen, and then there's been like soybeans, there's been drought and fires and floods and hurricanes.
I get the point. We're coming up on a break, but Kevin, extreme weather events driving the cost of fuel and energy, John says, and that trickles elsewhere.
Again, I think John is absolutely right. I think one of the novel things with this increase in inflation is we're kind of just discussing the subject. You just can't point to one thing as the cause of the inflation. A number of things have contributed to it.
Thanks for that call, John. We're talking to Kevin Barr, finance professor, chief analyst for the Center for Business and Economic Insight at UW-Stevens Point. We're talking about the high inflation data that just came out this week, drawing some connections to what's happening with the pandemic, looking how it fits into the bigger economic picture. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have a culprit you'd want to point toward for high inflation, or if you want to tell us how it's affecting you in your personal finances at your workplace. 800-642-1234. Has it changed the way you spend money? Have you changed what you're going to buy? And have your habits changed in general? Maybe traveling less, so you're looking for other things to spend that money on and finding lots of people are looking for the same stuff. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about inflation with UW-Stevens Point's Kevin Barr, professor of finance. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions or your experiences firsthand with inflation. That's 800-642-1234. Kevin, before we go back to our callers, I want to look at another culprit that some point to, and that's federal spending. Some big COVID relief spending in 2020. At the beginning of last year, we had a new package, an infrastructure bill passed. I don't know how much of that money's actually hit the streets yet. Is there a role for a lot of federal government spending driving up the supply of money in people's pockets, their demand for stuff, and then prices going up?
In my opinion, that certainly would not be the primary culprit. I mean, if you look at where we were back in April 2020, the unemployment rate hit 14.7%. We lost over 20 million jobs in 2 months. So money was spent back in 2020. By the end of the year, and the unemployment rate had gone from 14.7% down to about 6.7%. So, I mean, that's nice improvement. But again, there was more to be done. So there was more spending the following year in 2021. And that did lower the unemployment rate down to 3.9% at the end of the year. Now, that's true, but you still had 3 million fewer people employed at the end of 2021 compared to what you had pre-COVID. So, yes, there was government spending. Yes, it was a very quick turnaround to get people back into jobs, but it still didn't match the level of employment that basically happened pre-COVID. So, the supply chain issues are really kind of the number one driver of this. And again, energy cost, with that going up the way a 50% increase in gas prices, that trickles through everything that you buy.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Mike is with us in Richland Center. Mike, hi.
Hi. I have a question. It seems that the president often gets blamed for bad economics, and I'm curious, is the president to blame? Should he be doing something, or should he be not doing something to help this out?
Mike, good question. Kevin, what is in a president's bag of tricks, a toolkit to try to deal with inflation?
Mike, I think that is an excellent question. So I'll just make a general comment, not geared in any way toward any party, but typically I think presidents get too much of the credit when things go right and too much of the blame when things go wrong. If you look at interest rates, the Federal Reserve primarily controls interest rates in this country. And obviously, if you move interest rates, that can influence demand. But the Federal Reserve acts theoretically as an independent body. So if you look back through history and how things have gone with the economy, whether it's 1990 or 1980, typically there's way too much blame when things go wrong and too much credit when things go right. As far as what the president can do, again, the president can basically use fiscal policy. That was done through multiple rounds. Trump did it. Biden did it. And from that angle, you can control that part of the economy. You really can't control interest rates, and you can't do much with the supply chain. The supply chain issues, there's very little that the president can do with the supply chain issues in the short run.
Thanks for that call, Mike, at 800-642-1234, talking about inflation with Kevin Barr from UW-Stevens Point. Let's go next to Tim in Sauk City. Tim, hi.
Thank you, guys. You haven't discussed this, and I've heard a major factor here is the oil companies have transitioned in the last 5 years. Congress allowed the American oil to be sold internationally. Went under the international market. That had all changed in the 70s when we had the long oil lines. You know, the government restricted the oil to be sold that was produced in the United States could only be sold in the United States. And we've had a high production of oil in the country. So the oil companies wanted to get the highest price that they could. And so they changed the legislation. And now they're getting paid off, and they're doing in the president by doing that. The 50% increase in oil prices is due to the oil companies getting a payoff because they bought the politicians.
Tim, thanks for the call. Kevin, is there something to that? American oil being sold overseas, if it stayed here, the prices might come down?
To a point, yes. And let me kind of maybe try to explain this a little bit more. Mm-hmm. If you look at the overall global demand for oil or what's going on with oil prices, it's basically gone nuts globally. U.S. oil production, as was just pointed out, was at a record high before COVID hit, and it dropped about 20% after COVID. And with that drop in production, typically comes a drop in supply. And so typically what happens when the economy is going really, really good, oil production is ramped up, oil is sold by U.S. companies globally. But then when the economy contracts, inventories are cut back significantly. As I mentioned, U.S. oil production declined about 20% back in 2020. And then you get inventories at really low level. And then when the economy starts going kind of roaring back, then typically what happens is there's a mismatch between what is demanded and what is supplied, and prices go through the roof. In the United States, the price per barrel went from about $16 to $80. Overseas, it went from about $9 to about $80. Now that's backed off a little bit lately as production has started to kind of been ramped up. But typically there's a lag effect, and that happened in 2009, and it's basically happened again now. But as the caller pointed out, I mean, U.S. oil production is at a record high before COVID hit.
Tim, thanks for the call. We had a listener email, and I've seen this from some Democratic senators as well, an accusation that some of the price increases are corporate profit taking. They know there's some more money out there from federal relief, and they're looking to cash in. What do you think of those claims?
Corporate profits are 30% higher now than what they were back in 2018. So certainly that doesn't apply to every company. That's generally what has happened. So certainly in some cases that although costs have gone up to corporations, the prices that consumers are paying has gone up by more than the cost increase to corporations. Corporations, and again, the number that I'm throwing out there is basically tracked by the Federal Reserve.
in just our last minute and a half or so, what are you watching for over the next couple months to see if inflation has peaked and we'll start dialing down again?
Well, I think you got a couple things here, but I think number one is going to be that supply chain issue. If you can get COVID under control worldwide, you get rid of any labor interruptions, you get supply chains back on track, and that's going to do an awful lot to kind of lessen any problems with inflation. In addition to that, you'll also see a ramp up again a little bit in interest rates. Again, they're still going to be historically relatively low, but that will temper demand a little bit. And again, I think all this stuff, it's just going to smooth out a little bit. You won't have the rapid increases in economic growth. That's going to smooth out. You won't have the rapid increases in employment growth. That's going to smooth out. So by the end of this year, the Federal Reserve, take it for what it's worth, it's a forecast, but they hope inflation will be under 3% by the end of the year.
You use the phrase, if we can get COVID under control worldwide. That's one of the biggest ifs I've ever heard. There's a lot of ways this could go.
Well, you know, if you go back about a year ago, I think for the most part, there was a lot of expectation that, you know, when you went back to the grocery store, you weren't going to have to worry about getting toilet paper or something else anymore. And then you had the resurgence of COVID at the end of the year. And it's sort of like, well, now we're kind of going back to the way things were kind of in April and May 2020.
Kevin, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Rob, thank you very much for the opportunity. And thanks to all our callers for calling in.
That's Kevin Barr, professor of finance and chief analyst at the Center for Business and Economic Insight at UW-Stevens Point. We talked to him today about new inflation numbers out this week. In December, we hit a level not seen in the U.S. for about 40 years.